I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yes, I do identify as being an empath. You're not alone. There's many of us out here. When we were actual kids, this was not role modeled. Feeling angry or upset, they're going to tell you to cut it out. That's enough. Stop your complaining. And so we do that to ourselves. We dismiss our own feelings. We slough them off all the time. You're going to feel it. Your emotions. Feelings are information. This is the path towards honoring your own needs. Now you come back to sitting with your own feelings. There's no one else around. It's just you. So now you're here to do this work. What do I need? How am I feeling? Reparenting myself, giving myself what I always needed to give myself. Reconnecting with my creativity and my passions, because now I have all this space to do what I want to do. Find what lights your fire. Really make that your life mission.
Welcome to the Inspired Evolution. I'm your humble host, Amrit Sandhu, and you're tuning in to a conscious conversation designed to help you grow. Our mission here is simple. It's for you to live your purpose, live your best life, live the life you love. This podcast is sponsored by Enthusiasm for Life, by Great Creation itself. Keep the good vibes flowing for myself and yourself. Do us a solid. Subscribe to the Inspired Evolution podcast on YouTube, the home of the Inspired Evolution podcast. Now sit back, relax, open your mind, open your heart to this conversation and stay inspired. Keep evolving. Welcome back to the Inspired Evolution. And we have with us today, Inspiring Our Evolution, Freya Mortensen. Freya, how are you there, Sister Bear?
I'm doing great, Henry. Thank you.
It is so nice to have you here with us. For those tuning into Freya for the first time, hold your horses. She's the author of the book Colors of the Mind. It's a book guiding people to conscious living, authenticity, freedom. It's a book on mindset as much as it also is on your personal philosophies, I guess, which we're looking forward to diving deep into today. There's a thriving, budding Instagram following that you've got over on Instagram and your YouTube videos. I'm really excited to sort of hear a little bit more about the content that you're covering in that space, especially for people that I think you're trying to bridge a divide between it's being okay to be your true self if that invokes loneliness, but also the divide between connection and that as well. So I think you affectionately refer to it as the lone wolf, but there's also a whole body work around empaths as well. So there's a lot of ground we could cover today. I wanted to start straight out of the gate with just asking the question whether you think people are born empathic or whether they actually it's something they develop. And if it is something they develop, I've got a whole string of questions around that. Or if they are born, I've got a whole string of questions around that. So I'll let you answer the question first, and then let's see which rabbit hole we end up down.
Yeah, well, there's a whole string of answers that I can give around your question.
Let's hear them.
I could say, yes, people are born that way. I for sure would say that I definitely 100% was born that way, very sensitive to energy and emotions and taking on other people's emotions as my own. But I think that it's possible that people can develop a heightened sense of empathy as well, perhaps because of something that they've experienced that's ignited that in them. And just in general, you know, empathy is on a spectrum, right? We all are capable of that. But when we use the term empath, well, there's just a personality that goes along with it that needs some more attention.
Yeah, because there is, I don't want to say baggage, but baggage is probably the word I'm going to reach for, to the word empath. Can you define what an empath is? Like, obviously, yeah, just in your own words.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I can say it in a few ways. One being that they're somebody that is like an emotional sponge. They feel other people's emotions as if they were their own. They're very sensitive to energy and emotion. But they also have a connection to energy in way of Judith Orloff. She wrote this book called The Empath Survival Guide. And she separates them all into these different types of empaths. And you can be all of them. People who are plant empaths, who have this, like, it's more than a green thumb where you just know what a plant is feeling and what it needs. There's animal empaths where you're very connected to animals and what they need and what they're feeling. There's even earth empaths, people who are very sensitive to the earth's atmosphere and pressures and everything that's going on. And it's planets, connected planets too. What are the other ones that she talks about? Dream empaths, even, where we use our dreams as oracles. So there can be that, like, that take on it as well. That's a lot funner and happier to talk about.
Yeah, it's it opens up your mind really to, I guess, just how much everything is living. Because I think when you start feeling into that, it's like, oh yeah, I can tune into the energies of what's alive, and then it's like, well, the earth is alive, the trees are alive, the plants are alive, the rivers are alive, the atmosphere is alive. And then being able to, and I guess therein comes the word which you hear a lot is, and I hear it amongst empath friends, which is, oh, taking on, you know, I'm taking this on. Can you describe what empaths mean by that?
Well, you're taking on things that are not your responsibility. And then that extends to other things like codependency. That extends to other things like it being a trauma response. Like, in order for someone else to feel better, or rather, in order for me to feel better, because I'm taking on their stress and it's giving me anxiety, what they're experiencing is giving me anxiety. So I need to make them feel better so that I can feel better, when that's not my responsibility. So there's this issue of lacking emotional boundaries. Boundaries is the big thing that I talk about a lot
too. Yeah, I noticed, and I knew it was only a matter of time before we ended up there.
But well, that big B word comes out. Before,
yeah, that's I like it. Boundaries with a capital B. But before we dive deeper into there, I think discussing the nature of the empath a little bit further. Yeah, because I think to some degree, and I'm not sure, maybe I'm just needing some work on myself, touch wood, but to some degree, don't we all do that a little bit in order to make a relationship feel harmonious? We kind of, I don't say take on the other person's stuff, but we help the other person navigate their experience a little bit more smoothly. And if that means I have to contort myself into a certain shape a little bit. Isn't that what healthy relationship being looks like?
Sure. But then there's people who do that all the time, and not just a little bit. They do that a lot, to the point where they lose touch with their own emotional needs. right? So their needs don't matter. It's other people that do more so. And the people that I coach, like, they'll be givers. They're constantly giving. They have so much compassion for other people, and it's beautiful and it's lovely. And that's what the world needs more of. But then they lack it in themselves. They don't know how to do it for themselves. And some won't even allow other people to do that for them either. So then that's where it gets a little bit problematic.
Can you describe that problem and the source of that problem a little bit? Like, is there a common source to that problem?
In my experience with myself, with the people that I've been coaching, it comes down to how they value their worth. So their worth, their self-worth, is based on what other people think about them and what they can do for other people and of what value they are for others. And I mean, a lot of times they're raised in environments that are conditioning them to be a pleaser, to not be selfish. It's not about you. We're not here to, you know, worry about what you need all the time. It's about what about other people? You know, and sometimes the empathic person will have some, I always say, you know, givers attract takers. And so sometimes they are conditioned in an environment by people who are taking from them, because the empath doesn't have any boundaries and wants to please people, wants to be liked, wants to be seen in a good light.
Correct me if I'm wrong, maybe because I'm a male, so I sort of see things a little bit this way, and I'm happy to sort of, I'm sure it's somewhat universal in the world we live in, but I'll just speak from my experience. But oftentimes a lot of our value, like you described, is attached to what we do. It's like, hey, you know, what's your name? Amrit. What do you do? Podcaster coach. It's like, why does it matter what I do? Like, why was that the very next question? Like, go away. Piss off a little bit. Sorry, I don't mean to be like that. But there's that element of how much value society in and of itself attaches to the doing nature. And it's almost, I have my own sentiments around this, so I hope no one takes this on. But, you know, it's like the doing is the cog that we fulfill within the mechanism of the social stream of everything. And it's almost like your value is the cog and the function that you perform to some degree, which is what's enforced in the environments for not just some of us, all of us in many ways, isn't it? Like, I know you mentioned it's for some of us. Yeah,
it is a lot based on, you know, what do you do for a living? What are you doing out there? What's your role in this world? Imagine if we asked people instead, what's your passion? What are you passionate about? Right? Because that's more of who are you being instead of what are you doing? Who are you being on this planet? And oh boy, you know, people come into my coaching to work with me. What are you passionate about? Helping other people.
Damn it. That's me.
And that's lovely. That's a great passion to have. Like I said, we need more of that. But is it to your own detriment? Where it's all about helping other people and your source of self-worth is primarily and solely based on external validation. You need other people to tell you that you are good, that you are okay, that you are worthy, because otherwise you don't believe it yourself.
Okay. Discernment, calibration. How are we able to tell whether we're giving from a leaking cup or whether we're giving from a full cup, or whether we even need to not be giving at the moment and just fill up our own cup? And yeah, help me with my cup. Hey, your Inspired Tribe. I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart. And it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. That these people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him, and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate, because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast.
I know, right? No, ask somebody if they know what their needs are. And if people have no idea what their needs are, then it's probably likely that they have an empty cup. What do you mean what my needs are? I don't know. I have needs? What kind of needs? Well, you certainly know the needs of other people very well, I bet. What are the needs in other people that you're helping them with? They'll, you know, name off a whole bunch. No wonder your cup is leaky, because you're just letting it all ooze out, giving it to everyone else. You start to patch up those little holes, those little leaks, once you start to take care of your own needs. Like, oh, taking care of my need right now, which is that I need some alone time today. I have to say no to all these social engagements. I've been taking on too much, I'm getting burnt out. So I'm patching this one up so I can fill up my reserves. You know, oh, I'm saying no to lending money to this person anymore. I can't do it anymore. I got to mind my own budget, my own monetary needs. So I patch that one up. I'll see my thing going up as I take care of my needs.
A couple of questions about our needs there. For some of us, I know it sounds doable, but I know you've got a whole coaching practice built around this, supporting others on this path. It sounds doable, but it can be quite confronting to start doing that. Let's just take the example of lending people money. You've been lending someone money for some time and they pay you back, and then eventually it's like, oh, that's not working for me. It can be quite like, oh, but it feels like almost like you're rubbing the cat the wrong way to not live into the patterns that you've previously been living into, right?
Guilt, right? That's what comes up. Just dealing with the guilt. That's the biggest barrier. That's what we would say holds us back from taking care of our own needs, is feeling guilty about it. If I'm doing something for myself, that means somebody else might have to go without. So it's just, I think, a matter of perception and how we're thinking about it. It's like, well, am I enabling this behavior in this person? Is it holding them back from taking their own financial responsibilities? Is it interfering in the kind of quality of our relationship? Our relationship would be way better if we didn't have this lending money thing going on in the background. Or maybe I would really understand what the nature of this relationship was much clearer if this lending of the money wasn't going on in the background. So guilt is one of those things that people have to start to understand the difference between healthy guilt and unhealthy guilt. Because unhealthy guilt is when you think you've done something wrong, but you really haven't. It's okay if you don't want to lend money to this person anymore. There's nothing bad about that.
Absolutely right. And I'm just conscious that in some instances, because of the funky nature and blessings that relationships are, you will draw a line and you will potentially recognize healthy guilt and toxic guilt and then make a decision. But then sometimes even the other party rubs you up, kind of calls you out and goes, what, like, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So having, you know, put a boundary in place in some ways, you know, which is actually a healthy thing. And then, and therein lies again, like being able to meet our needs can be such a challenge because of the dynamic nature of all the elements involved. It's like, okay, I stood up for myself a little bit. And then the other person just bulldozes right over that sometimes. And you're like, that didn't really work. Is that just happened to me? No one else? Sorry. I can see your smile. It's probably happened a lot.
No, it happens. It happens. Or you're pleasantly surprised and you have a talk with this person in a very, you know, genuine way and compassionate way to say, I know you're having trouble with this and I really wish I could help you, but I can't anymore. I hope you understand. And they might be like, you know what? I totally get it. Thank you for all the help that you've been giving me, but I understand that you're not able to do this again. And thank you for being upfront with me about it. That happens too. And you're like, oh, they took it so well. What was I so afraid of? Oh my gosh, they understood. Yes, they understood. Look it. People will show you that side of them. They're like, yeah, I get it. No worries. Or they'll show you the other side where they get really pissed off. And it's always information for you about where you stand with that person. So setting boundaries is a good opportunity to see where you stand with this person. It's scary. It's like anxiety ridden at first. But, you know, it's a necessary skill that we need to learn. And it helps us to have healthy relationships, especially for deeply empathic people who are deep feelers. It's really hard for us to have those conversations because we don't know which way it's going to go. So we hope for the best.
I'm having kind of a profound realization, maybe you can help me cement it or correct it in this conversation, is the cup that I mentioned earlier. Are the walls of the cup literally your needs? Could you say that?
I would say the contents are your needs. And the walls of the cup are your boundaries. So if you don't have any boundaries, then all your needs just, they don't exist. They're not contained. Where if you do have boundaries, then all your needs are contained and you have a nice full cup.
How do we start to learn to identify what our needs are?
Mm-hmm. You're going to feel it. Your emotions. Your feelings are information. So when you feel tired and exhausted, that's information that you've been doing too much. And you need to take a step back from something. What do you need to delegate? What do you need to start asking for help for? What do you need to start to change? You know, if you're feeling sad, it might be a need to take care of some emotions or communicate some feelings to other people. If you're feeling really bored, it might be an indication that I need some passions. I need to bring back some hobbies into my life. I need to do something. If you're feeling lonely, it's another feeling that gives you information of, I need some connection. I need some connection with people who understand me and appreciate me.
Are there empaths that can't determine their own feelings from other people's feelings, or does that not really happen?
True. So that's what makes it hard for them to understand their needs.
Mm.
Yeah, you're catching on over there. Right? It's like, I don't know my needs because I've been fixated on other people's needs. I don't know my needs that are based on my own feelings because I'm fixated on other people's feelings. Like I said, your feelings give you information about what you need. And so, yeah, if you're only focusing on other people's feelings, then you're only going to be focusing on what they need instead of your own.
And from that point, once again, tune into your own emotions to try and find what feels energizing or what feels, I guess, de-energizing, and to start to recalibrate your path back home. Is that the advice?
Mm-hmm. Even just sitting with yourself, you know, I always will put my hand on my heart, on my chest, so I can have some physical contact with my physical body. That's here. It's me, you know, and just try to source four feelings that I'm having, you know, and I can sit here and I can feel gratitude. Well, I can also feel happy, and I can feel some stress and anxiety, and I can also feel some fear. I can feel happy and I can feel fear at the same time. You know, we have all these emotions going on within us, but which one are we giving our attention to? Which one am I feeding, or which one am I ignoring? Because some people might sit there and be like, I don't know. I feel cold. I feel hungry. They go into the bodily sensation, the emotional pieces, right? But okay, you're connecting with your body in some way.
Stop.
It's telling you you're hungry. Okay. It's telling you your feet are cold. All right, put on your slippers. Yeah, that in itself is practice to just like check in with yourself. You know, just start there. Just start there. You might not be able to give yourself what you need right away because you don't know how yet, but you're starting to at least acknowledge what that is and letting yourself know, okay, we're learning. We're starting to pay.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Attention.
Part of me in this conversation is still fixated on empathically drawing other people's emotions in. Do you find that are people like the relationship towards wanting to people please others, even when it's a negative experience for yourself? Just specifically people pleasing, when you know it's compromising your own structural integrity to some degree, and yet you continue to do it. Is it because somebody, like you mentioned this earlier, your self-worth is attached to it, but is it, could you use the word there's an addiction? Like, would you say it's an addiction of some sort? Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. A habit. It's a bad habit. It that becomes an addiction, right? Yep. It's learned behavior. And it's also kind of a form of control. Like you feel like you have some kind of control over something. That's the addictive part in it. And once in a while, you get a lot of praise. You get a lot of, you know, gratitude. People people really appreciate you. But for a really dependent people pleaser, it's like, you know, with an addict, how their tolerance for use goes up. And what they used to get a lot of satisfaction from, maybe just a glass of wine, it doesn't do it for them anymore. And now they're drinking a whole bottle. Now they're drinking like to numb themselves. And so for the people pleaser, at first it's very rewarding. And then it gets to the point where it's just not doing them, not doing anything for them anymore. People are showing all this gratitude for them. They don't even accept it anymore. It's like, because now they've built this resentment. Now they just realize like this isn't sustainable. This, what am I doing? Like this isn't working anymore. That's a lot of the times when people will start to reach out to me, like it's become a bad habit that's interfering in my own well-being and happiness. Used to work, it doesn't anymore.
Where do those people start with you? Is it back to our needs?
We do some inner child work. Like I said, connect to the feelings. Building self-compassion. You know, starting to take care of yourself. And just, you know, if I am the one that has to give you permission and say you're allowed to do this, okay, this is your homework for the week. I'm giving you permission to do this.
It surprises
That's
me.
That's what it has to come down to, okay? You like, told me I'm allowed. Yeah. You know, I'm allowed.
Permission slip.
Exactly.
50% of coaching, to be honest.
It's a prescription, you know, like a doctor would prescribe you. Here you go.
Take 2 hours for yourself.
Prescribing this to you. Yes.
Sorry, yes. I shouldn't laugh. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, because it feels uncomfortable. It's something that's just, but you want to evolve yourself. You want to move on to the next level. You know that something is waiting for you. You know that there's something more than this. You know you have the capacity to be something greater than what you are right now. You feel it in your bones. You're like, this isn't all that there is. There's more. I have more. But I don't want to give it like I've used to been giving it the whole time. I want to do it differently now. I want to be smarter about this now. I want to learn how to still give, but also from a place of self-compassion and with boundaries.
I do want to dive into self-compassion and the inner child and help. You can help us sort of start a dialogue with our own inner child. But in there, we've been discussing empathy. And we've touched on the word compassion. Just a piece that I wanted to sort of just pepper in today, and then we'll dive back into compassion and the inner child and self-healing. The difference between empathy, and compassion. Is there a difference? Can you describe a little bit?
Yeah. So I like to look at cognitive empathy and emotional empathy. So cognitive empathy, I think, is more of the sympathy, more or less. Like those two words kind of are interchangeable a little bit sometimes. Like I can understand what someone is experiencing. I might not really feel what it's like, but I get it. You know, somebody had to put their cat down. I'm not really a cat person or a pet person, but all that cognitively, I can understand how that would be hard for them. And then emotional empathy is where you actually do feel it. Like, oh, like you feel that little pain in your heart for them. You know, your heart goes out. Maybe you cry with them because you really, truly, genuinely feel that. And then compassion is the action behind the feeling. So you feel something and then you are compelled to do something about it. So then maybe I send them a card. Or I send them like some gift or I take them out to dinner or I take them for a walk. I do something, right? That's that's the compassion. Compassion is the action behind the empathy.
Right. Very useful. Thank you. interesting question that popped in from there. I'm conscious I'm out on a tangent and I'll pull us back in eventually.
Okay. I love going off on tangents. Surprised I haven't yet.
You know, there's like kinesthetic learners and auditory learners and visual learners. And you're describing, you know, there's cognitive versus emotional empathy. And so in that space, do kinesthetic people run the risk more of being emotional empaths? Is that a thing, or have I just made a link in my mind that, I don't know, it's just a random question that I guess we're out on a tangent.
No, like there is like physical empaths. Like if you broke your arm, like I might feel like that pain in my arm too, right? Or if you're having a headache, I might have a headache. Some people can feel like the physical symptoms that other people are experiencing. Like I could have an upset tummy and be like, and then somebody else later be like, oh, that dinner didn't sit well with me. And, you know, I've been on the toilet like, oh, okay, that was yours. Okay, I'm fine then. Is that what you mean? Like in terms of kinesthetic, yeah. The body? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, people feeling and they end up feeling it on and yeah, being more susceptible to that to some degree. Yeah. Okay. So inner child. Building a relationship with this bloke or this girl that's in there. Well, inner child. For some people tuning into this podcast, maybe it's the first time they've heard this term. Can you describe the inner child? Who is this? Is there two of me? There's someone inside me? What's going on? And how do I build a connection, build a relationship? And why? Yeah, bring me in.
So if I'm feeling sad, and let's say a friend stood me up for the 10th time. 10 times would be a lot though. But it, you know, I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling rejected. Like, oh, they keep canceling on me. And if, and I say to myself, yeah, they probably don't like you anymore. You know, it's probably something you said the last time you hung out. And I bet you they're going to ghost you and you're never going to hear from them again. And you beat yourself up for it. What you're really doing is that feeling of sadness, that feeling of rejection, that's your inner child. Your feelings are your inner child. Like I said, your feelings are what you need. And so your inner child, if you're not giving them what they need, you're not going to be living very pleasant life. So your child comes to you, is like, oh, so-and-so canceled on me again. Do you imagine saying to your kid, yeah, you probably said something that you shouldn't have had last time, you know? Like, I bet you they never call you again. You better smarten up. You better be a nicer friend to people. Okay? Like, it sounds so harsh when we pretend like we're saying that to our kid. But we say that to ourselves as an adult. Why is that okay? So it's really understanding, okay, how would I speak to a child about this? About their feelings of sadness. And speak to myself like that. I say, you know, I know you were really looking forward to spending time with that friend. You know, maybe that friend is just dealing with a lot of things right now. Maybe they're struggling. Or maybe right now, you know, maybe sometimes friendships kind of veer off for a while. Sometimes they have little gaps, periods of time, and that's okay. You know, this maybe we can trust that this friend will be able to connect with them again one day. But in the meantime, we'll be patient with them. So we're showing our friend compassion, and we're also showing our self compassion by saying, "I know we love this friend. We wish we could have spent time with them. What else are we going to do today instead?" You know. And we might text them back and say something lovely and whatever.
It's really interesting as you're sharing your example. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because you've managed to dance the dance quite well, obviously. It's your funny work. Pardon me for how that sounds. But nonetheless, there is such an opportunity for when you're having that chat with yourself to victimize the self. But in your instance, there was no victim. It was more situational. And I was almost waiting for the moment where when you're talking to your inner self, the little self, it's like, oh, poor you, you know, for feeling that way. But you, none of your languaging afforded the poor you, despite the feelings being sad. Can you unpack that a little bit further, please?
Yeah, it's like you just want to keep this balance, neutrality. You want to validate your own feelings, which is what is so difficult, is we're always looking for other people to validate us, but we don't do it for ourselves. So if I'm feeling sad, I'm going to validate my sad and say, it's okay. I'm allowed to feel sad. I'm not going to say, oh, this is stupid. You know, why are we making a big deal about this? And we might start that our conversation that way. We probably will, because our thoughts are very habitual. They will go that way. But what we can start to do is catch ourselves when we're doing that. Like, okay, actually, how can I think about this differently? How can I validate how I'm feeling so that I'm not beating myself up or making myself a victim or bashing someone else? It's a practice. Like, you have to practice that, because when we were actual kids, most of us, this was not role modeled. Going to your parent, feeling angry or upset, they're going to tell you to cut it out. That's enough. Stop your complaining. Go, you know, clean up your room or whatever. Or it was totally dismissed, right? And so we do that to ourselves. We dismiss our own feelings. We slough them off all the time. So it's about inner child healing is a lot about reparenting yourself, coming back to yourself like you would the parent that you always needed to have to validate your feelings so that then you can have your needs met. Right? We just want to have our needs met. And we can't rely on other people to do that all the time. I mean, that was supposed to be done when we were kids. That was our parents' job to a certain degree, to meet our needs, to teach us how to meet our own needs. Majority of people, we're not getting that. And then we're all messed up and we're all, you know, going to therapy and needing help for decades to figure all that out. Like, there was this little thing that I saw. There was like this line that was drawn. It's like, here's the first little, like say 18 years of your life, your childhood, more or less. Okay? And then this longer section here, it's like, okay, this is life. Okay, here's your childhood. And then here's the other section of your life that is time spent in therapy talking about your childhood. Right? And then you die. Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Yeah. It's interesting to feel into, yeah, just, there's a whole underlying arc in this conversation already thus far around wholeness, and giving ourselves what we need, meeting our own needs. And I think really we've landed there squarely when you're inviting us to reparent ourselves, and giving ourselves exactly what, yeah, so far we've learned how to discern our needs, but then also get to a point where it's like, actually, like, yeah, even your inner child being able to be its parent and not have to seek the external sources. And I think there's a level of maturity from my experience that comes from having built that relationship. I know from, and I speak from having become a parent myself, it was quite, I don't want to say it was a period fraught with shadows, because it was so beautiful, touch wood, when kids come through, but also with the lack of sleep, sleep deprivation, the way I've been describing it is like your walls of resilience just come straight down. And everything that was your shadow that was hidden behind those walls of resilience just like jumping over the fence. It's like, hey, here's all this unresolved shit you got to work on. And it's like, great.
Oh, I know.
Okay. So, you know, being Mr. Inspired Evolution to touch wood in some ways, it was like, okay, here's an opportunity to roll up your sleeves and like get stuck into some stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was actively aware of, and maybe I'm too spiritual, but the way I was looking at it was my son at the time and now my son's, touch wood, are holding space for me to become the father and the man that they need rather than me still being a boy, you know. And a lot of it was like, okay, emotional regulation. And it was like, okay, yes, regulation, but then also some of the stuff we're discussing here, which is like, yeah, but not all of it just needs to be regulated. Like, some of it needs to be expressed. Some of it needs to be lived. Some of it needs to be felt. Some of it doesn't need to be felt and doesn't serve you anymore, and you've been carrying that for ages. And it was just like, oh, my God, there's a lifetime's worth of work here. You know, like, back to your line is like 18 years and like all this emotional work. <It's> like, maybe hashtag do the work rather than hashtag talk about it so much. But I don't know. That sounds also like I'm pointing fingers. But, yeah, I think there's a whole body of work in there when it comes to our emotions and learning to reparent ourselves. Yeah. And I really like the term practice that you used as well, because I know for myself, like, venturing out, because most of this stuff is like you and I are talking about it now. So there's like a spotlight on it. And so someone tuning into this conversation, like, they're feeling it, they're getting it. But then when the rubber hits the road, you're usually on your own in an experience. You know, you're interacting with somebody or something's happened and it's just you in that moment, right? And then all the emotional stuff comes up and it's so easy to just not do the work and not feel it. And then all of a sudden it's like, actually, no, I'm going to give myself permission to feel. And it's like, you know, and from experience, it's like the first few times I did that, I remember feeling like a victim. It was like, oh, like, that really sucks. And it's like, I feel like I'm, oh, and then it's like, actually, no, it's more situational. It's not about you. This is just a situation, Amrit. But you are feeling a certain way, but just because you feel low doesn't make you a victim. And that's been like a great learning journey in and of itself. Sorry, you're nodding. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Like we play a victim and that can only go on for so long. Like, do that. Go there. Okay. You're allowed to have that. But don't stay there. Don't stay there. Like, find the other story to tell yourself instead.
Hey, your Inspired Tribe, I want to take a quick sec. I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart, and it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him, and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate, because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast. Building a relationship with self. I think at this juncture, I'm going to ask you to share a little bit about your own journey, how you got to doing this work in the world, primarily because I'm conscious that, yeah, like you're speaking to the challenges that empaths have. And I guess I've researched you, so I sort of know, but I think it's useful at this juncture for the podcast for the audience to follow along. Because I've got some really, well, as a high level question, is like, do you identify as an empath? And then doing this work, how do you draw your own boundaries around people that are also struggling with boundaries? And yeah, being able to relate with them so well, do you still find little backdoor crevices where it's like, oh shit, I didn't set up a boundary there? Do you know what I mean? Like, does that happen to you? Do you get caught unaware? So all of that sort of say, yeah, if you can share a little bit around how you relate to this work so deeply, your own story and journey, and then how you start to come home to your boundaries.
Thanks. For sure. And yes, I do identify as being an empath. For sure. You know, there was a period of time where I was like, oh, this name empath, this is just a farce and it's really just trauma, or it's, you know, some people say it's just borderline personality or it's codependency, it's neurodivergent, whatever it is. Okay. I'm a deep feeler. I know that. Does it stem from trauma? For sure it does. Have I ever met an empath that didn't experience any trauma? Not yet. And if they did, there's something also called intergenerational trauma. Right? That's just something we carry with us that we don't realize. But boundaries is something that I was terrible at. Terrible. I mean, I had no concept of any of that. And then once I learned it, just like anyone else who's learned this concept of having boundaries, like, oh, well, gee whiz, why didn't anyone ever teach me that? Why didn't anyone tell me that I could take care of my own needs and honor my sensitivities and I'm allowed to? And that actually makes life easier and better and I have more energy. Oh, right? Does it mean that just because I know how to set boundaries now that I'm a master at boundaries, just because I teach people how to set boundaries, that I'm a pro? And that I'm perfect at it? No, for sure not. There's still things that I do that I'm like, yeah, that wasn't cool. Like, you just totally made something about yourself. You just internalized that, or you enabled somebody in a certain way. Those things still go on, but I'm conscious of it. I have an awareness of it, and I know that it's part of the learning journey, and I don't beat myself up over it. I use it as a learning opportunity because there's always learning. Like, you can never learn enough about boundaries, and then something else comes up to challenge you. It's like, okay, cool. I'm never going to be perfect at this. So yeah, like I have a daughter who's 15, and so respecting her boundaries and just, oh, giving her space and allowing her the independence to, it's very interesting with kids because it's almost like we do grow up with boundaries, but then we're told that they're wrong and we're shamed for them. You know, like if I want to say, I don't want to go to school today, too bad. You got to go get your boots on. It's time to go to school. You know, it's like, but I'm trying to express a need that I have that I'm just not feeling well. Maybe my energy's tapped down. I just need a day off. So that, you know, but we disregard that kind of boundary in kids. Or kids' bedrooms where we just bust in there without knocking. You know, like, can you please knock? I don't need to knock. I pay for this home. You know, I pay for your rent. I don't need to knock. I'll come in here whenever I want. So there's all sorts of different examples that we can look back on our kids expressing boundaries to us in their own little way that we shit on, you know, and we make them feel like they're bad for it. So yeah, we all have boundaries, and then somewhere along the line we lost them, and now we gotta learn them again. And we're always learning, always learning.
I'm experiencing some positive guilt. As you're describing this to me, I just realized my son hates being tickled and I love being the tickle monster. I'm just like, shit, there's a boundary right there. Just like trampling all over.
I know, because they're, hey, but then once you get like wise, like, oh, he's doing a little boundary right there. Oh, pat, give yourself a pat on the back. Like, yes, I spotted that one. Amazing.
Yeah. It's cool to sort of feel into what you're describing in that we've always had them and then we kind of lost them somewhere along the way, but it's just a matter of remembering them and reinstituting them because that feels more accessible than like, oh, I've just got to manufacture something out of thin air. You know, that feels like, well, where do I begin? Whereas it's something we've always had, but and we just need to reclaim it, makes it more accessible. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's empowering for sure.
So you also identify as the lone wolf empath. So who's the empath? Lone wolf. So what's the lone wolf empath? What's the lone wolf? And
well, yeah, you know, last year I was going through a depressive time and I'm a spiritual person and I had kind of forgotten a little bit about my spiritual path, which will go on, right? When you're going in those dark places. And so I Googled, like, what's the spiritual meaning of depression? And it's a dark night of the soul. Like, oh, yes. Okay. That made me feel, oh, I'm going through this dark night of the soul. There's going to be something really great on the other side. We just got to get through this little bit. Let's say it was my first time because I'd noted this term before. Like, oh, yeah, that's what it is again. Okay, we're in that. And then I was typing up this newsletter for my email subscribers. And as I was typing, I was talking about loneliness. And I was like, it's kind of like lone wolf, being a lone wolf. And this, as I was typing, I was like, this is the energy I need to embrace. This lone wolf energy. Okay. You're on your own. You're by yourself. I have like, the depression was based in a sense of loneliness, was losing parts of my family, losing relationships, being just very alone on my own, you know, being a person who is an online coach. And so you're very isolated in that realm as well. And I don't know, it just popped in lone wolf energy. Oh. And I just ran with it. And
pardon the pun. Sorry.
Yes, that one. And I was Googling lone wolf and it just seemed like everything else that was out there was kind of like making it seem like some dark, sad thing to be. Like, I don't want it to be like that. I want this to be an empowering way of giving yourself permission, right? Like, once again, I give you permission to be this way. And a lot of empathic people have experienced those periods of loneliness because they find themselves alone, because the people around them, once they start to set boundaries, they find themselves very isolated and alone with nobody. They got to restart over. And so why not embrace that and be okay with that? And that's what got me out. That's what got me through this dark night, was the lone wolf energy, was just saying it's okay. Like, just totally, total acceptance, total, no judgment about this way of life right now. So what if I spend 90% of my time alone? I'm doing some deep work right now. Something is going to come out of this. And yeah, I attached the empath, a lone wolf empath, to that because a lot of empathic people do experience this loneliness and aloneness. So I wanted to attach that power of a lone wolf with that term, you know?
Yeah, I can see the empowerment that it's bringing in and really feels empowering because I can imagine there's somewhat of a vicious cycle for empaths in particular when they start to identify that And I'm using the word they.
Right? I know.
When we get to the point where it's like, touch wood, the you start to identify the healthy need for boundaries, and then, like you said, you start ending up more and more isolated. And you might not even be able to identify the healthy need for boundaries, but you might just start to feel energetically that you're just tired of taking stuff on. And so you just retreat further and further and further and further and further and further into yourself. It's interesting, though, because when you usually describe the term empath, it feels kind of like, oh, yeah, like it's all about connectivity, right? It's got this connectivity frequency. And then you've got this lone wolf frequency. Yeah, is there a reconciliation between the both? Like, how do you?
You're connecting with yourself. This is the path towards honoring your own needs, right? Like without any distractions around. Now you come back to sitting with your own feelings. There's no one else around. It's just you. So now you're here to do this work. What do I need? How am I feeling? Reparenting myself, giving myself what I always needed to give myself, reconnecting with my creativity and my passions and the things that I've always wanted to do, because now I have all this space to do what I want to do. So it's a connection to yourself. That's what's happening.
Random question. Pardon me for this. I'm going to ask it. But wolves are generally pack animals. So lone wolf, is it something that we develop to understand our needs, fill up our own cup and install our boundaries in a really healthy way and then reintegrate back into the pack? Or is it something that we, identify with, carry, helps us? Is it like for a certain period and then we reintegrate into the pack? Or is it something that actually determines our trajectory going forward? Have we put a random question on it?
And there's no rules. You decide what you want to do. We're born into a pack. We usually veer off. There are, like, in the wild, 30% of wolves are dispersers. That's the term that they use. They're dispersers, lone wolves.
What does that mean? Oh, for lone wolves.
They go off on their own. They go off on their own for whatever various reasons. Probably mainly because of survival, because there wasn't enough food in the air in their pack to go around, so they had to go off on their own for survival, or also too much competition for mating, so they went off, and also to be able to mate outside of their pack, so they could have more diversity in their gene pool. I did a little research on it.
I like it. I can imagine. You know? There's a.
So you usually go off on your own, right? Like a lot of lone wolf personalities, they'll probably go off on their own. As soon as they could move out of the home, they're out of there. They're like, I'm doing my own thing, and then the purpose is to find their own pack. So maybe they found their own family and develop that. But then there's a pattern here, or something's going to happen where it's probable that they could disperse again on their own. Right? So this could happen a few times in your lifetime where you go through these periods, and then maybe you pack up again, and then maybe you pack up again to go out on your own, right?
There's a strengths and traits of the lone wolf or the lone wolf empath. How can they leverage that to lead more fulfilling lives, I guess? Because I imagine they make for some good leaders. They can lead themselves in and out of certain situations.
Leading of themselves, yeah. More of a teacher maybe than a leader. I don't think they would like to be leaders that much than a teacher. Like an inspired leader, let's say. You know, by default.
And is that the main? Is that the main thing you think lone wolves are suited to?
No, I don't. I did a video on this one too. I said why I would not make a leader. Why I would not be a leader? Because we don't really like groups that much. We don't like to be like the head person of a bunch of people. That's too much, especially as a, as an empathic person. No, we don't want to take on that role. We just, I'll be over here. You can come ask me some questions, but I'm not taking over anything. Right? Like more like a shaman or let's say an elder, right? Like in indigenous groups, like somebody who's just there to give guidance, but not necessarily be the, you know, tell everyone what to do or be that person.
You've mentioned creative pursuits quite a few times in this podcast, suited towards creativity as well, if you're the lone wolf in some ways.
What's that?
Suited towards creativity for yes. For the lone, yeah.
Yes. It is a lifeline. It is a lifeline to our existence. For me anyway. Since I was born, I've had a passion for music and movement of my body and art and the beauty of art and catching things that, you know, that other people don't see. Hearing things in a certain way that other people don't hear.
Well, there's a whole... Any further advice for those? I know there's a whole YouTube channel dedicated to this. And I will put a link to Fina's channel in the show notes below for you guys to go check out. But yeah, any... Like for those that are feeling lone wolfy and empathy, if I can I say it that way? I just said
yeah, I love it.
Thanks for the permission slip.
Yeah,
like for those that are feeling alone, empathic, like any words of wisdom, sage advice for those people?
You're not alone. You're not. There's many of us out here that are or that have struggled with exactly what you're experiencing right now. But we're managing to thrive through it. And so find what lights your fire. Really make that your life mission. Whatever it is, whatever that might be, you know, it's going to be so different for everyone. And just own that and tend to that as a way to ground you and to remind you how awesome you are. Just give yourself that compassion, you know, just always speak kindly to yourself and mostly just, yeah, you're not alone. There's many of us out here.
Yeah, it's not lost on me, just the profundity of your work, Freya, especially as I start to tune in more and more online and feeling into how you're just providing how necessary. Well, my highest value is connection when I do my values work. So just noticing how much of your work is giving people permission to be their lone wolf empath self, like just completely owning it. And then also sneakily, I don't know if it's sneaky, but like bringing them together as well. And it's like when, you know, and it's like this, that's relieving to some degree. It's this. I don't know if it's a catch 22 or not. I don't know. But it's, thank you, I guess, is what I'm trying to say in a really weird, twisted way.
Yep. That's right. We can connect with other people, but most importantly, make sure you're connecting with yourself first. And then the connections you have with other people, next level.
Yeah. Freya, I could thank you for today's conversation in the podcast, but really I think at the heart of it also is, what we don't get to see in this podcast and, you know, we do get to revel in though energetically is all the time spent where, you know, you've, you know, like you said, it's all a practice and, you know, you've spent minutes in the dojo, hours in the dojo, years in the dojo working on yourself. Installing your boundaries, having a look at where your needs are, learning to fill up your own cup, and then learning how important that is to ultimately share that with the world and us here today. So just wanted to, thank you, but also just acknowledge you for who you are and, yeah, the frequency you're carrying in the world, touch wood, and really appreciate your sister bear. Yeah, thank you. Oh, Sister Wolf. Sister Wolf. Thank you so much, really. Yeah, thank you. For those that want to tune into your work further, obviously I'm a fan of the YouTube channel. Your Instagram is also very alive. Can you direct us to your website potentially? Yeah.
Yep, that would be freyamortensen.net.
And do you reckon those are the best places to get in touch?
Instagram or directly through my website too.
Awesome. And I'll link all of that into the show notes below. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this amazing episode of The Inspired Evolution. Without you, the Inspired Evolution tribe, this podcast would not be what it is today. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Thank you so much for being so inspired to evolve. It's truly inspiring. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Inspired Evolution on YouTube, the home of The Inspired Evolution's video podcast. We release inspiring conversations such as this every week, along with guided meditations and empowering insights, all designed to help you grow and evolve. Honestly, your subscription on YouTube to the channel helps us out a great deal. And one of the other benefits, if you're having any insights or shifts from these episodes that you want to chat about, or if you'd like to leave myself or the guest a message, please do so in the comments on YouTube. I truly look forward to hearing from you. And as always, tribe, remember to stay inspired and keep evolving.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.